going to result in the assignment of special troopers to the international airport, with emphasis on drug investigations. The last thing it's going to enable them to do is to concentrate patrol personnel on state highways, on the Seward Highway in particular, for example, which is going to result in an increase in traffic-related offenses in that are brought into the system. The other thing the troopers are doing, which is sort of separate apart from both their ability to sort of reallocate personnel and the APD's addition of new officers, is that right around the same time, July 1st, they will be putting 5 additional troopers on the road as part of a special traffic team with emphasis on violent enforcement. As a result of a grant from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which means that in effect what you're going to have, to answer Senator Ziegler's question, is 75 new officers plus the 31 troopers reallocated plus 5 more troopers. So we're really looking at really an additional increase in terms of the case development capability of the Department of Public Safety and Security. Well, one of the other reasons, by the way, Mr. Chairman, that I suggest breaking the figures down here to allow for some positions, to authorize some positions not until January, is that, for example, with the judge, let's say that the legislature finds it appropriate to authorize the creation of a new district judge on July 1. There's a 30-day minimum period where applications are going to be solicited. There's another minimum of 2 weeks where the Judicial Council is going to be interviewing applicants and deciding on the selection of nominees to submit to the governor. The governor then has 45 days to make an appointment, which really means that if you authorize a judge for July 1, and it's not authorized until sometime, say, early June, that it's going to be next to impossible to get a judge there on the bench working much before October. So there's going to be a lag period here anyway, which means that, and as I understand these figures contemplate a full fiscal year funding.
One more question. I really have an interesting question. If we apply what you just told us to another
citizenry decide that the level of police protection they have at present is unacceptable, and authorize the expansion of police personnel in that area, is going to impact the entire criminal justice system in the state. Situation, of course, that the system will be faced with, say, my office, to begin with, is that these, come July 1, assume there are 51 new police officers out there who are ready, willing, and able to make new cases. They come in. I have to have some kind of policy direction from somewhere as to what should be done with those cases. Right now, under state law, anyone who's arrested or charged or referred to our office under a state offense is prosecuted by our office. We have done everything we can, and I should say, in fairness to Anchorage, for example, that in the last 2 years, they have done a substantial job in picking up prosecutions under for minor misdemeanor offenses under their local ordinances, better than any municipality in the state. And we're encouraging them to do that. We will continue to do so. But there are offenses that are only offenses as a result of state law. And of course, a municipality cannot make an offense a felony under ordinance. So anything that's a felony or a serious misdemeanor is going to come to our office. And the people of Anchorage or the people of Fairbanks or the people of whatever community we're talking about expect that those cases are going to be processed, that people are going to be charged, that they're going to try.
In response to Mr. Nichols' comment, I think that each individual has the right to set the level of law enforcement in the city of Anchorage, given the statute of the state and other state functions. In this case, it's very advantageous to have said that they reach a higher level. They're paying the bill for at least $1,200, and it is an indemnity. So I would want to ask for the concern of the committee to reach a higher level of protection and make sure this bill, in fact, is required to provide more environmental health as well as greater funding for enforcement. Anchorage on a per capita basis is vastly different. Attorney's office is an admirable job I expect there. I think that this is one of those measures that have a response to a local decision.
How far does it have to go before your police saturation actually puts an adverse curve from your crime level? I know I'm familiar with one community police, you know, where they finally got so many cops with the crime level is really low, you know, you got a few homicides, but nobody pulls anything big because there's a cop almost at every block. At what point is that? They did it in Washington, D.C. Just absolutely put enough cops on where it's safe again. I go there frequently enough to know that you can now walk where you never walked before. So what I'm wondering about, how far you have to go before your crime statistics do the other switch. I know there's a point there.
Sure.
And, maybe not in white collar crime. You know, if you just spread your police into some new crime, why, yes, you can keep up.
Sure, street crime, you're absolutely correct. Obviously, that point is going to vary from one community to another.
That's an awful lot to ask without coming into the budget through the screening process.
Well, I don't misunderstand me, Sam. I didn't mean to convey to the committee that this is an administration request. This is not an administration request. This bill was, my understanding of this bill is that it was a bill that was put together in a sort of a cooperative effort under the sponsorship of the administrative director of the court system and was introduced as a courtesy to the court system by the two respective judiciary committees. Now, I could be mistaken about that.
Yeah, but why wasn't this part of the court system budget so the court system could request it? The governor never cuts the court system budget. He just puts it over for us to look at. This one has quasi-blessings from a lot of people that it doesn't have the absolute staff of the court system. They're dodging food for this.
We raised that question with them. I think they're in probably a better position to respond to that. Mr. Barrier is here, and I'm sure he'll like to when he gets on the hot seat, so to speak.
I'm ready for it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
You better. Well, is the cost system, is this the cost system bill?
This is.
Why wasn't it part of your budget? Or wait, you guys can get me one.
Yes, my name is Richard Barrier, the deputy director of the last court. And is this under oath? No. Rented out last week to help to share it with everybody in the room. Investigation. So far, I don't think I've told legislature lies, so I don't know. Yes, it is a court system generated bill. The history of it is that last fall, as Dan said, in October, when it was election, we knew there would be additional service areas taken over by the city. And we're aware that there would be a sizable impact on the court. But Dan is commenting on his own budget. At that time, he didn't have an idea. The city really had no firm idea of how many people and where they would be and when they'd come on. We checked it out and no one had firm plans. We said, well, rather than put in our budget a bunch of positions, judges, to wait until after January when the budget was passed to see what they actually were for the budget process and to try to firm it up to where it was a little more accurate statement of the assembly. Also, we felt that the impact is a system impact. It's not an impact strictly on the court. Certain impacts on public defender and district attorney. And that presenting it as a basically an omnibus or unified bill of both branches of government that would give the legislature a better feeling for exactly what Senator Ziegler was talking about. This is an impact from the decision the city has made and should be treated as type of impact. We're not trying to circumvent any particular budget process, but rather than coming in as a supplemental addition onto our regular operating budget, we felt that having all agencies together in one bill, treating it as a separate issue, is a clearer way for the legislature to deal with it. We discussed it with the governor's office, and at that time, I think even Mr. Hickey was somewhat opposed to the whole concept. We've done a considerable amount of work on it in the last 2 or 3 months, trying to figure out just what's going to happen. And I think even he now sees, has to point out several things that evolve around here that are going to be impacting on him. And he's concerned too now. But at that time, we asked the governor himself to, or his office to introduce it. And their opinion was, well, let's wait to see what happens. Our opinion is that certainly for the court system, the impact is going to be of such significance to wait and see until next April for supplemental or whatever. That, given the volume of cases, seeing that this is primarily district court misdemeanor type cases, that if we're not prepared for it, that in 10 months or 8 months of operation, we can have literally 10 or 20 or 30,000 cases in our way in the process. It's such a bill of cases to slack off and don't have the judicial personnel to process in trouble. I guess I should comment also on timing issue. Mr. Hickey stated that he's not sure what the timing of the impact would be. In our meetings with Chief Anderson, he stated that in a fact that as state, at least one, I believe another academy worth city police have gone through the academy in the process of being trained there. And on July 1, he says, anyway, and I have to believe him, that his intention is to have 51 people out on the street working on that date, not train. bring the people on in some kind of safe and process. I think we probably could have absorbed it and held off maybe next year on the supplemental. But if you have 51 more people out there July 1 and they're going to be arresting people and bringing them in to be arraigned, bail set and all that, somebody has to arraign them, somebody has to handle the safety. That was our concern. Probably we need to do some planning, avoid a major crunch in the area. It's obviously controversial for the issue.
But I
still feel like it has at least brought the issue really to the legislature to consider. And if you know, as Dan was saying, if you'd like to go back to the operating budgets or the fee conference or do something with the operating budgets, the vehicle by which whatever impact is funded is great material. But it would be easiest for the legislature to review this impact in a single package.
Well, $1,000,000, I don't like the cost of complaining to us being added to the bill. I'd like that.
We don't object to coming forward and acknowledging it's our bill. Again, well,
in the fact that it's a supplemental for the making that a supplemental
impact. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a good lease. The city they want to lease the space and work out a very good agreement. That's about the actual place.
Well, it turned out about three things. It was a bunch of it, so we closed it one night. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This increases the membership of the legislature, the Senate from 20 to 25, the House from 40 to 51. The purpose of the amendment is threefold. One, it recognizes the fact that there has been a substantial increase in population in the state. There has been no change in the size of the legislature since statehood. Overall, it would tend to keep a more close approximation of the per capita representation figure as originally envisioned by the framers of the Constitution, even though the state population has gone up much more than this would increase the size of the legislature. Secondly, it recognizes that barring a major population shift that nobody feels is likely, that southeastern and western Alaska will lose representation after the 1980s.
as a result of the 1988 reapportionment, even though they're proportionate representation in the House, it might be reduced. Third, it does provide for an odd number of both Senate and House members. It does break ties. There have been organizational delays in the past as long as a week as a result of having an even number of legislators on both bodies. It has been reported, I think, by these editorial comments that I've seen on it that supported the resolution of the South Central, Southeastern Democrat passed a resolution endorsing it as a convention.
You might just amend the resolution to cover the House only and leave the Senate by the way it is, when you have one absolutely ridiculous body, because once you crack this, which one, there's no way, well, there couldn't be more ridiculous than us now, but you have precise. But once you start it, you're never going to be able to hold the body down. Every time there's a population imbalance, you'll follow it this way.
Chairman, I'm not convinced every time there's a population imbalance you'll do it. The population of Alaska has almost doubled in the last 20 years, and if you increase the size of the legislature by 27% when the population is doubled, that doesn't seem to me to be very hasty action in that regard. I don't know of any other state that has had percentage-wise, the population increase that the state of Alaska has had, we in fact are falling considerably further behind what the, at least the framers originally visualized would be the per capita representation of the legislature.
Based upon a brief constitutional convention, because they were estimating a population of a million and a half, 1 million. You know, but it's going to run away. I'm sorry to see it run away, but it's not. The Bush guys survived by staying there, That's fine if the split comes the same way on the floor.
Well,
he's got to have two thirds. You know, you have about the same chance as that as I do with the 90-day session chance. And I consider my much more worthwhile. Well, sorry, you were on that side too.
I gave her.
Well, your eloquence got the bill out of it.
Try it again. Thank you.
What time is it? Well, in that case, I would develop a little bit more.
We'll give you a couple of days to do that. We have been registering to
why Northwest
give us the overview of the criminal code. There's many times.
What happened? They don't mind if I off down, give up.
I expect quite a and it's going to be bitter.
Of course, today I try to go through the code in about, I guess, 20 minutes.
Oh, I like what you do on felony.
Just with record, my name is Barry Stern. I've been staff counsel to the Criminal Code Commission and Subcommission for the past two years. I thought I'd try to give an overview of the criminal code, and to do so, I guess the most important concept is that we've classified offenses into a very limited number of categories. The main category of the code is called offenses. That consists of crime and violation. A crime is punishable by imprisonment or a fine, whereas a violation is only punishable by a maximum $300 fine. There are very few violations in the code, but an example would be littering, just punishable by fine. Crimes are split into felonies and misdemeanors. Traditional distinction. If a felony is anything where you may be prison for more than 1 year, misdemeanor is imprisonment up to 1 year. Felonies are in turn divided into five classes. First one is murder in the first degree, classified itself with its own punishment category. Second one is murder in the second degree and kidnapping in the first degree. Okay. Those are by themselves, they're really unclassified crimes. The rest of the felonies are divided into A, B, and C felonies. A, of course, being most serious, rape, armed robbery, aggravated assault. The most of the felonies in the code are C felonies. That's the greatest amount of felonies in the code. Misdemeanors are divided into two categories, A and B. A misdemeanors would be a maximum 1 year imprisonment. B misdemeanors would be 90-day maximum. So again, all the offenses in the code are wrote into crime violations, felonies, misdemeanors. These are the main categories, A, B, and C for felonies, B, and misdemeanors. And this scheme here, the A, B, and C, and the A, B, the statutory is basically what the sentence of the final section of the code, the sentence of the procedure. The important thing is that all eight felonies are treated the same for sentencing purposes, whereas under existing law, you have a separate penalty for each crime. Now, this is an outline of the code, and I'm trying to go rather quickly on it. Code is broken up into, I believe, approximately 8 or 10 chapters, and some of the chapters are in turn broken into articles. Chapter 16 is the first chapter of the code, parties to crime, and that deals with general principles of accomplice liability, also when it's an organization liable for crime. Chapter 31 deals with attempt and solicitation, incoherent crime, does not have a conspiracy statute. The original bill did have a conspiracy statute, and was taken out by the House Judiciary Committee. Chapter 41 is offenses against the person. This is probably the most important section of the code, versus crime. It's divided into five articles. Homicide, assault, kidnapping, sexual offenses, and robbery. In the criminal homicide article, we have murder in the first degree, murder in the second degree, manslaughter, and criminally negligent homicide. Assault contains 3 degrees of assault, plus the crime of reckless endangerment. Kidnapping contains 2 degrees of kidnapping, 2 degrees of custodial interference, and a provision on lawful imprisonment. The sexual offenses article contains 3 degrees of sexual assault. The first degree is being basically rape. We don't call it rape, we call it sexual assault in the first degree. Sexual assault in the second degree is felony sexual contact. And third degree involves sexual penetration or sexual contact with people who may be mentally incapacitated or otherwise affected. The robbery article just contains the robbery statutes, which are divided into 2 degrees, basically in terms of whether the defendant was armed or not. Chapter 46 is offense against property. Contains 5 articles. Theft is the major one. The most important thing in the theft statute is that we have a consolidated theft provision, which combines, I think, into one statute, which divides 3 degrees, approximately 20 or 30 provisions of existing law. We have a burglary, criminal trespass article, arson and criminal mischief, forgery, business and commercial offense. Chapter 51 is offenses against the family. I'm going to Chapter 56, Defense Against Public Administration. You have your provisions there on bribery, perjury, escape, interference with judicial proceedings, obstruction of public administration, and abuse of public office.
They don't do much to us for that.
I believe it's an existence. Chapter 61 is Offense Against Public Order. And what we have there is riot, disorderly conduct. One provision which is quite abusing is leaving house to be sure to be used in the court. I believe the statute on harassment. Chapter 66 is a fairly sexy title. It's called Offenses Against Public Health and Decency. And that has prostitution and gambling.
Well, what does the solicitation on the other one come from?
That's strictly
You mean the general solicitation statute?
Yeah.
Well, with prostitution, we had it's an interesting result. We have a general solicitation statute that says if you solicit a crime and it's not committed, you're punished one degree below the actual offense. So if you solicit a crime, for example, rape, and it's never committed, you would be punished as punishable as a felony. With prostitution, the committee felt that the solicitation of prostitution in public should be treated more seriously than the act of prostitution
by either you or her.
He or her.
In other words, if it's in a house, it's not very serious. While if it's on the street where you're pestering the public, it is serious.
That's correct. The I should point out that it differs from the commission's recommendation. The commission's recommendation said that any form of solicitation, regardless of whether it was public or private, should be an A misdemeanor. The committee changed that and said it would have to be public.
You have to defend it. I think you represent it.
Gambling. I think both important changes in the gambling, well, there are two important changes in the gambling statute. Number one is we made an attempt, I think successfully, to allow for, quote, friendly poker games, to exclude that from the coverage of criminal law. Additionally, we attempted to deal with large-scale gambling enterprises by making a felony gambling statute that's patterned after federal law. But that is a significant change in existing law. In existing law, there would be no felony provisions. Weapons and explosives contains provisions on carrying concealed weapons, possession by firearm, possession by felons. It contains also provisions on possession of burglary tools and possession of explosives with intent to bomb. Chapter 76 is miscellaneous offenses. It is miscellaneous. We have a provision on giving tobacco to minors, provision on interference with constitutional rights, and a provision on transportation of minors transportation of depictions of minors engaged in prohibited sexual acts. That provision was added by the House Judiciary Committee in attempts to deal with the selling of child porno. I feel, from a constitutional standpoint, that there's a potential problem with that. Chapter 81 is the general provision section of the code. That's dealing with the general purposes of the code, the applicability of the code, how offenses are classified, general principles of justification, which tend to deal with the problem of how much force you can use in self-defense, how much force can be used by a peace officer making an arrest, how much force can be used to prevent burglary. Those are rather emotional topics. It did get a fair amount of discussion in House Judiciary, but that's where those are found. Article 5 deals with responsibility, which is the insanity statute. Article 6 deals with general principles of criminal liability, and that section is probably one of the most important sections of the code. In that section, we attempt to define the four mens rea terms, or the four culpable mental states in the code. And the four terms are intentional, knowing, reckless, and criminal negligence. And those are the only four terms used in the code to denote mens rea. And existing law, there's probably 30 or so terms that are used. try to have uniformity. The important thing, I guess, is culpability provision. I guess it's new to existing law in the sense that you have more specific terms, but it's very common to other states. I think doing some research before the meeting, and now there are 34 states that have revised criminal codes, and maybe with one or two exceptions, all of those states use those four terms, and they have common definitions.
What kind of
competency? Competency to stand trial?
Yes.
We did not deal with that subject. Yes. Since that was in Title 12, and it did not deal with the actual issue of insanity in terms of criminal responsibility, we did not even touch it. The existing statute would remain in Title 12. We never looked at it. And then you have your definitions. There are probably 52, I think, definitions in the code. And one thing that has bothered at least specifically police officers is that they have to look at the back of the code and find out what the definitions are of sections that appear on page 2. Legislative theory says it has to be that way. But we do have definitions that are used throughout, you know, defined in fact. Now, after Chapter 81, we have our Title 12 provisions, which are sentencing. We made a decision to deal with all sentencing procedures separately from the substantive provisions and keep those provisions in Title 12. Sentencing sections are divided, they're not really in articles, but for purposes of the presentation, I divided them into 9 sections. The first deals with sentencing procedures, and that deals with such matters as sentencing report, two sentences weren't concurrent with the consecutive. The second provision deals with fines for offense. For example, if you commit a felony, I believe the fine is $50,000, regardless of whether it's an A, B, or C felony, except not the fines for misdemeanors, and also for an organization convicted of a crime. Then we have a provision on restitution. We have a provision on community work service. In other words, the judge for a first offense may wish to order the person convicted to clean up the litter on the streets, for example, or perhaps do some tutoring in school. The fifth article, or fifth section, is the most important, and that's the imprisonment term. And I'll go into some detail of that in a second. Next section deals with how to determine a prior conviction for purposes of enhancement of sentences. And that's really important because under the code, if you're a repeat felon, you're going to be subject to presumptive sentencing. And so the determination of what constitutes a prior offense is set out in the code. Finally, we have, getting there again, we have a specific listing of mitigating and aggravating factors. And again, this is really important too, because for purposes of repeat felons, the code says you must serve a specific term of years. For example, 10 years for a second A felony. Now that term can be lowered or aggravated by 50% depending on the presence of the various mitigating or aggravating factors. The next to the last section deals with the three-judge panel, and this deals with the extraordinary case in presumptive sentencing, where even though the bill says it should be 5 years, the circumstances are so extraordinary that the person should either get more than 5 or should get much less than 5. And in those situations, the bill says you have to give it to a three-judge panel who does the sentencing. Finally, we have our provisions on parole and good time. And the parole provision is really an amendment of existing law. And what it says is that parole is not eligible. People who are second and third felon offenders are not eligible for parole. They serve their time. And then we have a provision on good time, which says all people incarcerated, I believe for felonies, are entitled to 1 day good time for every 3 days served. And that's really the only out for a repeat felon. No parole, but 1 day for every 3 days served. This is the final chart here. And this is kind of getting familiar with presumptive sentencing. The issue of whether to apply presumptive sentencing to first felons was probably the most.
Thank you.
expansion July 1. I frankly think that a good deal of that could be delayed in January. That would give us a much better handle on the kind of impact we're realizing, what we're going to do better. There are some things in here that are the chance to be delayed. For example, the public defender category, there is a block of money for Congressman about to report. The president of the $40 community, I can tell you from our office, the overhead schedule for non-court offices, I now have our office located in two different places where another thing that happened to the for example, in my budget, was requested by the government. It just allowed us to pass, especially with staff and the finance, because of the fact that the bill was submitted, that's probably part of the threat. At the present, in anyone who is reaffirming the application, the limited number of companies that are concerned will be able to plus the public official taking an office in the report and additional state data involved with our policy. That basically goes down to 67 communications per initiative and 37 phone calls per phone. Given those case rates, we do need an understanding of the right. We particularly need one in the face of additional impact that at any time that we can realize as a result of additional law enforcement. So from my perspective, it's essential that the legislature restore the position either to the vehicle of the bill or to the vehicle of the regular budget that is not in place. The position is an attorney for the position of the attorney that is the leading. It's the only item in our budget that we have. I believe the total cost of the bill is about $1 million. And without reducing the fees to specific, I think that total could be brought down to around $900,000 with, for example, the one position that I talked about with the court. One position was funded here for the public defender agency and the secretary of the state. One of the judges was added, Justice Kalati, and the other positions were only authorized to be examined. Perhaps even one or two of those would be authorized to be April 1st, which was one of the things we put aside with the president. I think that's the approach I'd like to enjoy to the committee. There's no question here that the system is going to be definitely impacted by what happened on the floor. The other thing that isn't addressed here is potential impact on the Department of Public Safety and on the police department. More cases being made by the Orange Police Department, strange or not, is going to impact the Department of Public Safety. It's going to impact them the way you need to service. You know, the sort of service where the sort of soft and potential business for executing one, for serving somebody to the computer, that sort of thing. It's definitely going to impact the division's presence. We want a contractual relationship with the city to run the underground, which is basically the main six-out-of-the-way building in the world. And the facility is going to belong to the city, we need it, and we can be out to the first place where both players are picked up and to the open. Those are two days that have not addressed by the bill. right now the state troopers police are 22 ways, and they're going to be delivered to 31 officers. You know, the police department is open to the police, so they're going to be set aside.
Thank you.